Coming up next on This Week in Computer Hardware, Seiki's $1,500 4K HD TV reviewed. Is it a bargain or something you might want to avoid? 4K GPU testing, it's an 8.3 million pixel beatdown, people. Oculus Rift or Oculus Puke, gaming, Ultrabooks, and more. It's all coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 216, recorded on May 2nd, 2013. 4K is the future. Brought to you by Manpacks, manly goods on a schedule. Get started today and have underwear, socks, toiletries, shaving supplies, and more delivered to your door. Visit manpacks.com/twit. You're going to get $10 off your first order of $30 or more, or buy a $50 gift card for $40. manpacks.com/twit. Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware. I'm your host, Patrick Norton, and this is the show on Twit, where we try to bring you the most important, exciting, and useful news in computer hardware and tablets. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, we love the, well, we like the tablets too. I'm not getting into that. We love the viewer questions. We want to talk about computers and making them faster, whether it's handheld, laptop, or our beloved desktops. Mr. Ryan Shrout is off at a secret briefing. Not a secret breeding, although I'm sure he'll love hearing about his secret breeding next week. And that laugh you hear in the background is Mr. Robert Heron, my partner in crime on Techzilla and HD Nation. HD Nation, by the way, is now available again in a long format, multiple segment show. You can find that on youtube.com/techfeed.
It's good to be here. Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you for being here, man. Should we cut to the mad chase and get straight to what Ryan Shrout promised last week, a review, an encapsulation, the highlights. Can you see the Google Doc, by the way, Mr. Heron? I want to make sure you can see that. Okay.
I'm staring at it right now.
The SE50UY04, a.k.a. the $1,500 4K HD TV, often available at $1,300 or $1,200. We saw a Groupon for $1,200 for it.
Ooh. Good price.
4K, yeah, it's kind of like, is 4K the future of HD TV, or is 3D the future of HD TV? And what can you do with an HD TV, Robert?
The answer is yes. I think for a lot of people, 4K is going to be more important than 3D was, although both have great things to offer, really. Without a doubt, each technology is the premium checkbox feature of that particular generation TV. So a couple of years ago, when they needed a new feature to really get you excited about buying a new TV, 3D was being pushed pretty hard. This year, without a doubt, and as we saw at CES back in January, 4K is what they're going to go for. It is not difficult to go ahead and quadruple the resolution of a 1080p screen. So, and offering that. Now, the key is then all the back-end stuff. Where's the content? How are you going to connect that signal? All those issues come up. But resolution, really, I think this year will be the new big feature.
What's kind of crazy in the testing we've been doing, Robert's been Robert purchased the HDTV, the 4K HDTV, with his own cash. It's been living here in the office. We've had it set up gaming. We've run Blu-ray players into it. And it's kind of funny because you're talking about video at 30 frames per second and gaming at 30 frames per second. We'll get more into gaming again at the second. Although we got to say the primary place to get true 4K content right now is gaming. Sony's 4K player that comes out in July, as far as we know, HD Guru says it is going to be locked only to Sony HDTVs. I spent the better part of a day computing with a 4K monitor at about 2.5 feet in front of my face. I'd say at 4 feet, I want a 50-inch 4K monitor for my desktop, although I would like a higher refresh rate. So it's interesting. HDMI 1.4, which is 30 frames per second available now. The next generation HDMI, which will enable faster speeds or refresh rates at 4K, probably not till 2014, correct?
That's my understanding, and not this year. However, the thing about that particular TV, the CK, was that it or the Seiki, excuse me. If you drop the resolution down to 1080p, you weren't limited to 1080p 60. We took it all the way up to 1080p 120, and it locked in. Now, whether or not that was exactly 120 hertz, was it actually throwing out a full 120 hertz refresh rate? It was above 60, and it was probably above 80, according to how it looked. So there is something there to be said for just an extremely fast flat panel, maybe used for in a gaming environment. I don't know of any other devices besides PCs that spit out beyond 60 hertz, at least as you know, your average Blu-ray player typically doesn't offer a custom resolution output or timing control. Excuse the background sirens. Somebody's on fire somewhere. But the nice thing is, at least, is if that panel can do a good 1080p signal at 120, that would make it, in my opinion, even more tempting as a gaming panel. And the new size they are talking about coming out later this year, Seiki was talking about doing a 39-inch panel at 4K. That would be even cheaper, I imagine, and that would be, I think, even a better size for someone to have in front of them at their desk.
That would be my desktop. I want to jump in and grab some from the chat room real quick. Somebody's like, 5,000:1 contrast ratio doesn't sound all that interesting to me. Do you want to stick a fork in contrast ratios and then maybe talk a little about the color and the image quality on the Seiki monitor?
Contrast is one of the most meaningless terms, really. It's unless you define how bright white will be.
Right.
It's a meaningless number. That's what it comes down to. The closer black gets to zero, the closer the big number goes to infinity. And a lot of contrast ratios you'll see reported are basically just we're gonna make the TV spit out as bright of a picture as we can, and then we're gonna do whatever it takes to make it almost go black, and then we'll give you some number. That's not something to worry about. Now, this is an edge lit LCD, and typically I don't care for those kind of panels that much, at least in terms of critical viewing. However, this one was fairly well engineered. It's VA panel, vertically aligned LCD panel, and overall, I would say the quality was pretty good. Scaling was one issue we ran into a lot. On that particular TV, if you feed it a 1080p signal, sometimes it didn't look so good. Now, one of the experiments I want to do next is on a PC system, you have an option in the graphics card to either have the GPU do the scaling or to have the monitor do scaling. And by default, it always wants the monitor to do the scaling. So my next experiment is going to be to go ahead and see if I can get 1080p looking better using GPU scaling from a computer. And if that's the case, then I've got a PC display, basically, that'll ramp all the way up to 120 hertz with 1080p content, in addition to give me 4K as well, which is really where you want to be. When you feed that particular TV 4K or any 4K TV I've seen, 4K material, it looks dynamite. And also for the Seiki, it also has an overscan issue at 60 hertz for 720p and 1080p content. About 2%. It's not the end of the world, but it's unacceptable in terms of HDTVs nowadays, too. So all of those things kind of come into play in terms of if this TV's right for you.
The biggest issue, so Seiki, one of the reasons Seiki was able to do this monitor so cheap. So at CES, 4K was going to cost you $25,000. 2 or 3 weeks ago, Sony dropped 4K for like $4,500 and $6,500, or right around, between $5,000
and $6,000. Those are premium TVs.
Premium TVs, I agree. And one of the reasons they're premium is they include things like, okay, they've got onboard computers of some type. They're going to attach to Netflix or play video games or do whatever, third-party.
Crazy new speaker technology, crazy new color technology. They're doing a lot in their sets. And they're charging a premium for them for that. So
the only issue is that Seiki's like, we're giving you a monitor. You want a set-top box, buy a set-top box. You want an amazing surround sound system, buy amazing surround sound speakers, because they put an inexpensive set of speakers in here. There's no, there's no online components.
True.
What
no
there
apps,
is,
no 3D.
Right. Three HDMI ports.
And then
ports.
I think it's really the low price lead. They're really going for low price and across the line. If you look at their 1080p 50-inch display, I want to say it was like $400 or $500. I mean, competitively priced products. So I'd like to get some of their other products in too, just to verify quality from something else besides this one spanking new off the boat 4K panel that they're now just getting into the country. So
right. I mean, it's interesting. So 1080, basically, it does not do the best job scaling 1080p content itself. Looks great at 4K. If you're feeding it 4K from another device like a computer, it's going to look fantastic. If you're feeding it 1080p, not so much. So Blu-ray scaling really on the device aren't your favorite.
No. But in this case, when I was able to connect an upscaling Blu-ray player that handled all that heavy lifting, it looked a lot better because something else was taking care of converting that 1080p content to 4K resolution. Of course, it's still not 4K video you're looking at, but it definitely looked a lot better. And it was nice to be able to say, oh, okay, I have a way to take my 1080p Blu-rays and get them properly looking on a TV like that in terms of the formatting, eliminating overscan, things like that. It really required some back-end hardware. And also, too, it's like if you don't own an AV receiver or some other device that's 4K ready and you're not willing to connect a computer to it, I wouldn't just buy this to sit on it going, okay, this will be my 4K cornerstone and I'm ready now to start adding other stuff. Don't take that route. Wait a while. There'd be other TVs. Right. There might be a better deal down the road. There might be something that adds passive 3D. I was really hoping a set like this would incorporate passive 3D in it. That's one of the things I really want to explore more about with the 4K monitors coming out, because you get the increased brightness, the less expensive glasses, and lighter designs, generally speaking.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting. 2014, new HDMI spec, 60 hertz on 4K HDTVs. This is really an early adopter product. And if you're planning on gaming on it, because a lot of people are really excited with gaming at 4K, you're going to need a bigger GPU unless you've already spent all the money. Speaking of which, Ryan just did a frame rating at 4K roundup. It's pretty exhausted. Exhaustive. High-end GPUs benchmarked at 4K resolutions. It's up at PCPer.com. And it's pretty crazy because Ryan was inspired to do this after he got the Seiki HDTV in. So let's run over the basics right now. 3840 by 2160 is 4K gaming. That is the equivalent of four 1080p streams, right? So, quote, a single frame of a game at 1920 by 1080, 1080p, produces 2 million pixels. A single frame at 3840 by 2160 produces 8.3 million pixels. HDMI 1.4, the current standard, will play 4K at 30 frames per second. Faster yep. refresh rates aren't going to be around until 2014. And you're definitely going to want VSync turned on for gaming. Otherwise, the tearing will drive you mad.
Yeah, please. As a PC gamer, that's the first thing I enable on every game. I just refuse. It's like I start turning down detail settings if I can't maintain a good frame rate with VSync enabled. That's the must for fidelity, if nothing else.
Right. It's crazy. So you look at the benchmarks. If you scroll down, actually, maybe Bert can pull up the review index where you can see all of the separate pages on this. It's pretty crazy, all of the testing that Ryan did, because he looked at Battlefield 3 with single GPU cards and then the $1,000 level. So if you start looking at the benchmark charts, Ryan basically did HD 7970 versus GTX 680 versus GTX 690, versus GTX Titan, then GTX 680 2 gigs versus GTX 680 4 gigs, the HD 7970 Crossfire versus GTX 680 SLI versus GTX Titan SLI, then the 7990 versus the GTX 690 versus GTX Titan, and then the 7990 13.5 beta, which is the new software beta from AMD that's supposed to improve the frame rating results, versus the HD 7990 Prototype 2.
You need more GPUs.
Yeah,
at least at this point, you're not doing it with a single or a double card. And these kind of resolutions, too. Gamers have been operating at this resolution for quite a while, actually, right, with multi-displays, not just a single display. But this is the new difference. We can now do with one HDMI cable 4K resolution on a single panel. And like you said, the one thing I really want right now is to get 4K up to 60 hertz and beyond. And for that, we're going to need new chipsets, HDMI standards and the above. Because with a PC, you could run it at 60 hertz or 120 hertz, but the monitor simply won't accept it. And that would be great for just having that as a desktop environment and beyond.
Pretty much, it's funny, we had a question in the chat room. It's Web0947, what can you play in 4K? Pretty much everything if you have one of the latest GPUs from AMD or NVIDIA. Ryan did Battlefield 3, Crysis, Dirt 3, Far Cry, Skyrim, Sleeping Dogs. We had a half dozen games through Steam.
I want a turn-based game. Maybe I'll load up the Sims, the new Sims game, or maybe Civilization 5. Something that doesn't require crazy horsepower to run. Maybe last year's games. That'd be a good one to run in 4K.
It's interesting. And I got to say, 4K, having used this monitor as a desktop, I want a 4K desktop. I want like a 39 or 42 inch desktop with a 4K resolution, because you have all of this real estate and you can have all of these readable windows open. I would like it at a higher refresh rate, but I would also like a pony. GeForce GTX Titan, the fastest single GPU for half the price. Take a look at the Radeon AC 7970. You really want dual GPUs for gaming, and I'm going to tell you to go to PCPer.com to find out which of them you want. I'm sure Ryan will talk about it more next week. Again,
4K he's game for for sure.
At the secret briefing I cannot describe. But I'm going to pull a quick one last quote from Ryan from the article, frame rating at 4K. I know Ryan says many users will want my opinion on buying this specific TV for gaming at 4K, but I'm hesitant to offer up a full recommendation. I have definitely liked my time with it and found gaming on it to be a solid experience despite the 30 hertz refresh level of the panel itself. You'll more than likely want to play games with VSync on to avoid the double up instances of visual tearing. If you do that, I think the quad HD resolution of 4K is a sight to behold. 4K looks gorgeous. And with a big screen, you have all this amazing 3D action going on. But higher refresh rates would be nice. And we will have higher refresh rates in the future. This is
so and more powerful graphics cards.
Yeah, for less money.
And some content. All of the above.
That's the big problem. You can buy a 4K movie. It's kind of like, you know, classic Starscape moving stuff. You know, unless Sony unlocks it, you will not be able to get future movies. There is no channel other than the Sony hardware, the FMP, the Sony player for 4K movies. There is no 4K. There is no existing 4K platform for television distribution. Is it coming? Yes. H.265, next generation chipsets, the World Cup in 2014 or 2016. When's the next World Cup of soccer? Is going to be probably a 4K extravaganza.
They're already shooting many sporting events now. Just about any of the prime events you'll see on TV for probably this season. I imagine even the final games in all the sports, there'll be at least one 4K camera doing some kind of test work there. And for some of the events, like you mentioned, I believe they have said that World Cup will be shot in 4K. I'm not sure who's doing it, though. I believe Sony, I want to say.
Right. It's going to be interesting. AMD details, HUMA, HSA in action. Josh wrote that up for PCPer.com. Quote, several years ago back, we first heard AMD's plans on creating a uniform memory architecture, which will allow the CPU to share address spaces with the GPU. It's an interesting concept and obviously a big deal for AMD. AMD is trying to do the APU, the combined GPU, CPU that's going to deliver all that is wonderful at the low end. And let me pull this up. The idea behind the HUMA is quite simple. The CPU and GPU share memory resources. They're able to use pointers to access data that has been processed by either one or the other. And the GPU can take page faults and not only rely on page locked memory. Memory in this case is bidirectionally coherent. So coherency issues with data in caches, which are later written to main memory, will not cause excessive waits for either the CPU or GPU to utilize data that has been changed in cache, but not yet written to main memory. Which is a cool way of saying the CPU and the GPU can access data that's been processed by either one of main system memory without everything falling apart. I think it's a fascinating concept, and I wait with bated breath to see what it benchmarks like. So that'll be
good efficiency.
Yeah, AMD details. I'm sorry?
I was going to say, I can't wait to see that design in person, actually. And if they can get that integrated, I'm hopefully into integrated chipsets. That's where I'm really excited to see that, to where you could have just increased performance either in a notebook design or, I don't know, maybe even a small form factor of some kind.
All right. I'd like to thank the chat room for pointing out that my camera was wobbling. I have now locked it down using a sophisticated method involving my thumb. And if you're looking for a $100 case, a micro ATX case, Ryan has fallen in love with the Corsair Obsidian Series 350D. This is pretty cool, actually. Corsair makes some pretty nice cases. And Ryan went off on this case. And when I say went off, I will say I am completely over having giant windows in the side of cases. I don't know if you – there it is. But this is a gorgeous, fairly understated case. I mean, sure, it's got the sort of vertical striping. I ran it with Scotch-Brite on the front, but you got a couple of USB ports and the audio ports mounted high, which I love. There's nothing I find more frustrating in a PC case than a building right now than finding all of the ports at the bottom of the case because I'm putting the case on the floor. Big giant window on the side, huge vent on the top that's going to allow your heat to rise out of the case. You can drop a couple of 120 millimeter fans up there. Oh, wait, up top is ventilation supports both 240 millimeter and 280 millimeter water coolers, use one of the bigger coolers, that's going to cut into your 5 1/4 inch drive space, or you can just drop fans up there to empty the space. It's a really nicely laid out case. SSD bays, Ryan notes, are innovative, completely toolless, and can be removed one by one if you happen to have long graphics cards that need the space. The drives simply push in from the back, and those are actually nestled down there under the front, under the drive enclosure. And it's pretty cool because it has really nice cable routing options. Basically, you can pull the back of the case off, route things behind the drive. You've got the knock-throughs on there. If you look at the, I think it starts opening the door on the other side, reveals the same side of cable routing, same kind of cable routing, and it's really cool. So that's the front side of the case, and then the back side of the case basically allows, you can put all of the messy wiring on the back side of the case, hide it beneath the motherboards, and keep everything looking all cool and sophisticated up front.
For like me, it's all about dust management. If it doesn't have good filters and that top intake or exhaust, depending on how you use it, if there's not a filter externally that I can remove, I freaking hate those designs. It's just, it becomes a nightmare. Hopefully that can come right on. Hopefully that's in there magnetically. You can just pop it right out and take it outside. I've gotten used to the point now, just disassembling my computer, take it outside once a year and just blow the crap out of it. But I did work with a new Cooler Master case, though. That front screen, actually, on the case that I was looking at, maybe it was Corsair. I think it was a Corsair design, and it was actually magnetically held in place, so I could just pop that off and then just go ahead and dust it right off, or even wash it and put it right back on. But my current PC, my workstation, actually has a top large fan, and the only way to get at its filter is to turn it whole case upside down, physically remove the fan to get the filter out, and it's one of the most nightmare designs. It's an older Silverstone design, but if there's one thing I've now come to appreciate, it's just being able to get at those filters and clean them. So for at least the heavier mid and larger tower systems, it's nice if you don't have to take the whole thing outside, if you could just pull filters out and clean them and put them right back, and to keep the internals as clean as possible, especially if you're going to put a window on the side of the damn thing.
I'm so over windows on cases.
I just don't want light. I don't want light shining up from under my desk. So if I'm not going to fill my case full of lights, then I don't see a reason to put a window on it either. But
so you can show off your expensive parts.
I know what's in that box.
I built it.
I'd rather see the benchmark results.
Yeah, it might be a little early for buying this one on Amazon. It's like usually ships within 1 to 3 months, priced $104.99 and free shipping. So apparently the channel is still getting filled for that one. Ryan took a look at the Oculus Rift. Ryan's been very excited about the Oculus Rift ever since he first heard about the Kickstarter project. He kicked into the Kickstarter project. So if you don't remember, the Oculus Rift is essentially the virtual reality, the virtual helmet, the over-the-head gaming experience. I think it's really revealing if you look at the tags at the top of the article. Video perspective, Oculus Rift development kit hands-on preview. Tagged virtual reality, video, Rift, Oculus SVR, Oculus Rift, Oculus, and the one I skipped over, OMG, I'm gonna puke.
Oh no.
Oh yeah.
I haven't tried it. I look forward to trying it. And I really appreciated his review, the video. He showed that it's possible for people who wear glasses to be able to replace the lens system in there with different, it came with a couple different sets of lenses for people with not 20/20 vision. You know, that'd be kind of cool because I don't think I'm going to be able to wear glasses and that headset at the same time, but I'll try. Yeah. But it was cool. He gives a good review, and he shows some unique ups and downs to the how it looks, and it gives you a good perspective of what it'd be like to have that on for the first time. And I appreciated that. It was informative.
Yeah. I think Ryan doesn't really do motion sickness except for, things that spin around and go completely insane. And he was a little concerned. Let me see if I can find the line there. Where did it go? Where did it go? Where did it go?
I'm the same way. I'm very tolerant to being moved around, except for that, whatever that carnival ride is that spins you around and the floor drops out. if I never sit foot in one of those again, I'll be a happy person.
That's one of my favorite rides in the world. I can never find them anymore.
It's fun, but don't ride it twice in a row.
The bad news is that after just a few minutes of use, I definitely felt the effects of motion sickness. This was most apparent when I was playing the faster UT3 style map while trying to aim and move at the same time, often in different directions. Ken noticed the same problem in his time with the Oculus Rift. There are many theories on what might fix it, including even lower latency head tracking and higher resolution images, but nothing has been proven yet. It was also suggested that I just stop being such a girl about it. And knowing some pretty serious girl gamers, including Tara Long over there, I think they're going to kick Ryan's ass next time they see him. But it's going to be interesting. He's going to keep working with the Rift to see if he can overcome his effect, the sickness effect by brute force. So I admire his
what are the motion sickness pills? Is it Dramamine? No, I forget what it's called. But I had friends who used to take that when like they were they like 3D gaming, but they just can't handle it. So.
It's going to be interesting to find out. It's going to be interesting to see, you know, there's also a sort of political side to this. John Carmack was very excited. We're waiting to see what the consumer device is going to be and when it's going to ship. But in the meantime, if you're excited about virtual gaming, the idea of a virching, which is I don't think a thing I've said out loud since like 1995, head on over to read Ryan's write-up at PCPer.com. One last one before we take a break to thank our sponsors at ManPax. There may be PSU issues for the Haswell power supply unit issues. The tech report, quote, came across an interesting story at VR Zone about Haswell's power supply requirements yesterday. According to that story, some power supply units won't support the chip C6, C7 low power states because they're unable to feed less than 0.5 amps through the 12-volt rail. So it's a little early for this, right? Haswell A hasn't shipped yet. I can't remember at this point if it's going to ship first in laptops or in desktops. But Tech Report can confirm the accuracy of the story, they say. It's essentially, it's an incredibly low load for the 12-volt rail on a power supply. And a lot of power supplies, I would dare to say, most power supplies can't actually deliver that low of an amperage on the line. Quote, they can also shut off when entering the low power C667, C7 states if the power supply unit's under or over voltage protection kicks in. VR Zone reported that PSU manufacturers rarely publicize their unit's 12-volt V2 rail specification, so it's kind of hard to tell which ones will actually support it. The general consensus, though, is that motherboard companies, and they quoted Corsair's Robert Pierce, who said he expects the motherboard companies to disable C6, C7 low power states in the BIOS. So you could turn it on if you wanted to, if you had the appropriate power supply. It's going to be interesting to see how this affects people who are upgrading. But you know what I mean? The people who upgrade their motherboards and processors are a small subset of the people who are eventually going to buy Haswell, I think.
That's like me. I'm the person who though digs into the BIOS and says, you know what, if I have the hardware and if I can put it into a sleep state that's better than the last generation, I want to do that. So it's good to know, though. I'll have to pay attention to the power supply unit and read a few more reviews if I'm going to be building a next-gen box coming up here anytime soon.
Yeah. And thanks, Keith 512, desktops June 3rd for Haswell, which is kind of exciting because I'm still sitting on my Core i7-920.
I'm the same thing.
It's a lot of power. It's more power than I, you know, it's kind of funny because I always laugh because it's like leaving a, you know, 100-watt bulb running all the time because I'm taking it from it's been stored in the closet up in the front of the house because it's not only my gaming machine, but it serves as the server for the entire house, the video server for the entire house because there's so much power on it. But I laugh so much because when we were going through the issues with the furnace in the house, the one room that was always warm in the house was the front closet because it just had all of this heat pumping out of the computer constantly. And I kind of came up with this elaborate scheme for like water or ground loop cooling the machine if I was going to leave it in there permanently. So
the box has been fairly reliable for me, and I've had mine overclocked almost continuously for I don't know how many years now. it's running just under 4 gigahertz, and it keeps cranking away. The only thing that's died in my system has just been fans. Occasionally I'll lose a fan here or there, and I just cut it out, take it out.
You don't have any never pets. Maybe the cat here lubricates the fans.
And I've got a great desk that actually gets my PC actually sits off the floor. It's actually hung from under the desk, so it helps mitigate the dust a little bit better. But yeah, keep your computers clean. Get one of those nice, what is it, EDVAC, the electronic data vac, I believe it's called, that blows out your computer. You can get them on Amazon, but that's the single most important piece of maintenance hardware that I've bought for a computer in a long time. It's just, rather than use the cans of compressed gas to blow out a computer for dusting it, those things aren't that great for you anyway. This thing is just a little electric blower that has a nozzle on it that works very effectively, and you can run it constantly, and it's using room air, so there's no compression and condensation or any other, you know, you're not shooting frozen air into your computer and possibly, you know, doing bad things that way. This is just room temperature air, dry as can be, but effective and a great quick way to clean a computer out. Go on Amazon and just look up the videos to see what people have done as far as blowing out a dirty computer. It'll put a cloud out if you've got a dusty
it's
box,
disgusting.
No doubt.
We're going to take a moment to thank our sponsor, manpacks.com/twit. Remember that URL. You're a guy. I love to shop. I'm a freak. Because I have so many friends that cannot stand shopping, which is why the internet and Amazon is so wonderful. But finding good products takes time. Underwear and socks, quality face scrub, natural shaving cream. I know I've also lost several people in the audience right now with a quality face scrub. Excuse me? Trust me. You need these things every day. But you probably don't want to shop for them. It's a pain. You got to drive somewhere. You got to deal with the crowd. You got to deal with, well, humanity in shopping, which is kind of an incredible waste of time. There's nothing more frustrating than realizing your socks are trashed right before a business trip. You don't have to shop for, and I love this line, manly basics ever again. Man packs is pretty cool. Leo Laporte, big fan. It's a start it, stop it, change it anytime subscription for all your basic essentials. You set up an account. And you tell it what you need. You need razors. You need shaving cream. You need underwear. You need socks. You need undershirts. Basic staples that you don't really think about until they're worn out or you're embarrassed when somebody takes a look at your socks and they can see your toes because you've worn them completely out. Case in point, the socks I am wearing right now are on the out rotation. This is pretty cool. Basically, every 3 months, you get a man pack with what you picked. And if I'm not mistaken, you're looking at Leo Laporte right now with his choice. Socks, underwear, and underwear wears out, people, and there's nothing more annoying than having to go shopping for underwear. The idea is that Manpacks is going to take care of that. It's really cool. I got a Manpack sent to me at a really nice razor, replaceable blades, and the idea that, hey, I'm going to stop throwing away disposable razors. I got a decent shaving cream that I wouldn't have found actually without Manpacks, and a pair of my favorite ex officio boxers inside the box, ready to go. And I no longer have to worry about, you know, getting into the REI from hell because the REI is kind of the local shopping place around here. The parking lot is always a nightmare. There's always too many people. There's not enough spots. I got to fight my way through the line. They may not have my size in stock. So the idea that Manpacks is going to take care of me. They're going to put the customers first. Let me quote the founder here. We put customers first because we want customers for life. Free shipping, free returns, easy customer management, the no BS return policy. You're always king. Every product is tried and guy approved by Manpacks because they want you to be really happy with the experience. Awesome website, easy to set up. And it's cool because there's two exclusive offers for Twit listeners. So go to manpacks.com/twit. You get $10 off your first order of $30 or more, or you can buy a $50 gift card for $40. The ladies out there, if you want your man to step it up, go to manpacks.com/twit. Pick out a few things that'll make them look a little better. And we want to thank Manpacks for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. And one last time, in case you missed it, manpacks.com/twit. So, Robert, are you still with me? Do you leave the house anymore to shop for clothes, or is it all about online these days?
Well, it's not entirely online, but I a lot more, I will say. I do a lot of shopping online, but there's nothing like going into a shop once in a while, though. Some of my local stores are pretty good, and I like to get out there and check it out. And also, if you're going to go buy a suit or something, I ain't buying that online yet. I want to get measured and fitted and look good. So, yeah.
And your fancy lifestyle.
and donate your old clothes to charity, especially if you just lost a lot of weight and nothing fits you anymore, like I had to go through not too long ago.
That's a good thing to go through.
Yeah, not bad, man. I've abandoned all the double XL wear. It's all down to large or lower, moving quickly to medium.
Wow. That's impressive, dude. Manpacks.com/twit. We want to thank them for their support of This Week Computer Hardware. Email us, people. Twitch, TWICH, at twit.tv. Do we have some any remaining, or because I think Robert may have answered all the questions from the chat room before we started recording.
Gave me a link or the name of the medicine people take for motion sickness under a lot of different names. Gravol. And who was that person? Scott. Thank you for that, by the way. I guess the technical name for it's dimenhydrinate. Dimenhydrinate. Well, tasty stuff. Thank you, Wikipedia.
Oh my God.
But I have had friends who, back in the early days of first-person shooters, uh-huh. About half the people, when they either it was a frame rate issue, we just didn't have the performance or whatever, but I just remember about half the people at the time were either prone to like, oh, I can't even look at you play that. It just makes me my sense of I don't know. It just really messed with their sense of balance. And if they were hardcore gamers, I do recall at some LAN parties, people were actually using a prescription or a over the counter drug like that to help mitigate that problem. And I'm glad I don't suffer from anything like that. I'm also one of those people that can read in a car while it's moving and. Not while I'm driving, but you know.
I can read in the car, no problem. But I got to say, I'm curious to get hands on with the Oculus Rift and see whether or not I am happy with the experience.
Like some of the people pointed out in the chat room, though, I want higher resolution. This does strike as a good beta product, good development product, but I want more resolution and I want faster performance. I want head tracking almost instantaneous at this point. Otherwise, it's hearkening back to it's better than it was, say, 10 years ago. But yeah. I don't think it's quite there yet, but it's getting close.
We got an email.
It's definitely the coolest piece of 3D out there that I've seen in a while. So
true. It is exciting stuff. We got an email from Ken about Ultrabook style gaming machines. He says, thanks for a great show. I listen religiously every week, despite what the doctor tells me. Thank you, Kent. We thank you for taking that risk. In any case, last week, about 2 weeks ago now, you had an email regarding gaming capable Ultrabooks where you mentioned that there is always the trade-off between portability, horsepower, and price. I had two follow-up comments I think would be helpful to share with the audience. Number one, this is really cool. The forum members over at Notebook Review Forums have compiled a list and keep it updated on gaming capable laptops in the 11 to 14 inch range with a list of specs. Currently listing about two dozen options. And I wanted to get this on because I know, Robert, that you are obsessed with a decent performing Ultrabook. So if you go over to...
I was this close to just before we did the show today, I almost walked into Best Buy to spend like yet another $1,200 on a new notebook. So I kind of need it.
Go to the link. Basically, it's notebookreview.com. What notebook should I buy? Notebookreview.com/what notebook should I buy/. And it'll give you this amazing thin and light 11 to 14 inch notebooks. Notebooks gaming worth compendium. So the requirements here, 11 to 14 inch screen size, weight less than 4.4 pounds, GPU. It has to be mid-range. It doesn't matter if it's old tech or new. But if we can go to the high end, unlikely, why not? So it gives you a list of the currently available models, and it's pretty cool. So they've got HP, Sony, Dell, Lenovo, a couple of models from Lenovo. So some pretty good information up there. Two, Kent says, I really like what Lenovo has been doing with the recent Lenovo IdeaPad Y400 and Y500 laptops, which are 14-inch and 15-inch laptops, respectively. They modified the removable optical drive base slot and called it an Ultra Bay that allows you to plug in discrete GPUs. That's pretty fascinating. So today, that's used to put two NVIDIA GeForce 650M or 750M GPUs in SLI mode, which is going to give you roughly the performance of an NVIDIA GeForce 560 Ti or AMD Radeon 6870. I'd expect more manufacturers to start to use this type of Ultra Bay concept for non-SLI removable discrete graphics so you can get GPU performance when you need it and use the onboard Intel graphics when you need portability or battery life. This is, of course, the dream that you can have all the GPU performance and all the battery life. Kent closes. Oops, sorry. It's certainly the...
I'm not looking at an Ultrabook, though, for gaming. I mean, I really want, when I see Ultrabook, I just want it to be as thin and light as possible. And I really haven't seen too many of the 3-pound Ultrabooks, especially with 13-inch screens that offer high-end GPUs yet. But I'm going to take a look at that length, though, to see if there is maybe this that is mythical cool. creature out there.
But like Lenovo's, the 14-inch is a little bigger than you're looking for, but Lenovo's IdeaPad Y400, you can get like a 650M or 750M in there. Kent says it's certainly the only commercially viable approach we've seen to externally removable graphics, since docking stations are often limited to specific laptop models and external Thunderbolt GPU enclosures often require a bit of driver hacking to work properly.
So. The other thing, too, is if you're going to go gaming notebook, there are a couple of brands out there, three that I know of, that do not support, especially if you go AMD graphics, you will not get a driver update beyond what they ship it with. And that is unacceptable for gaming notebooks. So go take a look before you buy one. Go take a look at that manufacturer's page for downloads and see if they provide driver updates beyond, say, one or two. Because with gamers, there is a new driver update every month or every 2 months, and it addresses specific bugs and performance. And if you're not able to do that update, and in the case of AMD specifically, specifically, and I have a Sony notebook with an AMD chipset in it that's quite capable, but apparently Sony and a few other companies don't pay in to the driver update program. So,
that's so annoying.
And so I found a great hack and workaround that they eventually squashed that too, because I imagine it's a money-making deal. So, anyway, there's only a handful of companies that do that, though. Most of the other companies that do provide mobile chipsets featuring AMD and NVIDIA graphics do provide regular updates for that. Or you can go right to the manufacturer, AMD or NVIDIA, and download updated drivers regularly that way as
for
well.
For laptop drivers? Because I thought...
Totally.
It's been a while since I've had decent discrete graphics in a laptop, but I thought they were AMD and NVIDIA were both trying to block, to go to your vendor.
They each have excellent manufacturer pages for mobile, and you're able to download the client. The AMD client does a check on your chipset, and if you're not part of that in-group, they say, oh, yes, go right ahead. We've collected the fee from the manufacturer, and we will allow you to then install this chipset or this update. And accordingly, the three companies I'm aware of that don't update the AMD, at least the AMD drivers, I don't know if this also applies to NVIDIA, would be Toshiba, Sony, and Panasonic. Beyond that, I haven't seen another notebook yet where I wasn't able to do the graphics driver update. And there used to be a killer workaround for it, too, like I said, but that even got squashed recently. And it's made me a little picky now about what notebook I'll go with next. So something to keep in mind, especially for gamers, specifically for gamers. For everything else, I don't really need a high-end GPU. It's more about battery life, and it's more about desktop performance and video playback, which just about any GPU will do just dandy nowadays.
I'm mostly fascinated with the idea of gaming on an Ultrabook, because I've always been very down on gaming laptops, because you end up spending a lot of money for something that's going to be outdated invariably in a ridiculously short period of time that you can't, in almost all cases, upgrade. Yes, I know there have been cases where you could upgrade the GPU in a laptop, but they are fewer and farther between than I would like. So, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Robert Herron, what's coming up with you? You have a giant pile of hardware.
Man, it just keeps coming. This is the time of the year where all the manufacturers are just starting to push their products out. So... we just finished up the CKTV. Let's see. I've got a couple of Blu-ray players I'm looking at right now. Two new audio products that I'm finishing up. I got a brand new Panasonic television that just arrived in the office. More. I just talked to Samsung the other day. They've got some new products coming our way, too. I also just saw the review for Samsung's brand new flagship plasma over at CNET. And if you can tell just by the article that the author and the reviewer is, that's probably one of the nicest things they've ever played with. So that's it's going to be expensive though, but I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to hopefully getting in the premium Panasonic plasma coming out this year, the ZT series. That should be one of the top sets available anywhere. However, the one I'm getting in from Panasonic next will be the ST, the value product that apparently offers as good of image quality as everything leading up to the very pinnacle of what they're offering this year. So it should be a phenomenal set and providing epic performance in terms of picture quality. So really looking forward to that. And there'll be more. I'm sure there's other stuff too. That's probably slipping my mind right now, but lots of good. Oh, switching products. Oh, look across the room. There's another product I have laying open over there. I have something from DVD-O that's new. We'll be taking a look at too. So
does that DVD-O scale to 4K?
No, it's just a 4K pass-through. So I don't believe it's doing any scaling. That's going to be a neat product. It's called the Quick 6. And what it is really is just a really nice HDMI switch that will also provide a flexible audio output. So if you have an older AVR with, say, optical or coaxial digital audio input, you don't have HDMI on your old receiver, but you want to keep it, this would be the kind of product you would add to that to give you a set of HDMI inputs, as well as with all those HDMI inputs plugged in, it would allow you then to send it out via, coaxial or digital audio for maintaining compatibility with your older gear. So I expect it to work just fine. But there might be some other products out there that might offer a better value, and we'll be taking a look at those products too down the road. So it's going to be fun.
I think my favorite thing about that DVD-O is the fact that it has the sort of HDCP locking that allows you to instantly switch between HDMI ports, which is something we've only seen in a few higher end AVRs, and the idea that you can
Instaport
Instaport
and Instaport preview is awesome. Is the other one that gives you basically thumbnails, video thumbnails of the active signal on each of those ports. So not only are you maintaining the connection, the encryption lock for each of the ports that are in use for HDMI, but then it will also show you if there's video and the signal's active, it'll give you a little preview window. So instead of seeing like input one or whatever the tag is you give for it, it would just show you what's coming through that input. So you could visually just look at it and go, oh, select that one. That's my game console running, or that's my cable box running, or whatever. I think my main goal for this will be just to hook up as many things as I can to it simultaneously and see if I can get all six windows running at once. So
I'm excited.
Six products.
I'm excited.
It's pretty cool. And it has NHL support built in too. So if you don't have some, that's why I really see the Quick 6 as being something good for doing an upgrade to an upgrade in place for an AVR that you already have. This is something that would keep you from running out and buying something else that might be more expensive. So
it's a good
thing. We'll see how it works. I have yet to plug it in.
Darkroom 08 says, Robert, have any cinema wides or 21x9 monitors? We haven't seen any in the wild at this point, have we?
And we've been requesting patiently, and I want to say Vizio shipped a few, but we are on their list for the new one that's coming out. And I guess them and LG. I'd even like to see LG's 21x9 PC monitor. That should be easier to get a hold of, I would imagine, than a TV. And Lord knows, don't ask me when we'll see an OLED. Those are like mythical unicorns right now in terms of who gets those for review, if and when they start shipping here in the U.S. So 4K is coming hard, though, so expect tons of manufacturers there. All the new premium TVs, most of the new premium manufacturers' premium sets will feature 4K resolution. And beyond that, I'd be curious to see what they're going to do next year. Will they be introducing 8K? No, I think next year it'll be a switch back to 3D, I hate to say it, but it might be glasses free this time. So that might be the other big deal that we can do with all these extra pixels on the screen.
I wait with bated breath. One more comment before we go. Dudes Freed says NVIDIA started supporting discrete laptop GPUs about 2 years ago. I never go back to manufacturer anymore. And Motorbug says, hi guys, what's better, iPhone or Android? And I'm going to go ahead and say whichever you want to spend your money on.
I think for your first smartphone, if you've never had a smartphone before, I would be more comfortable handing something from Apple to somebody just to let them play in that environment. But I will say I love my Android phone and I ain't giving that up anytime soon. I like the flexibility of Android.
And Android's, I got to say, compared to even 2 years ago, Android's in a much better place in terms of the operating system, the applications. But it's kind of funny because I'm so used to like the iPhone being like, you can do it this way and it's the only way you're going to do it unless you jailbreak your phone. I'll be an Android and I'll be like, holy, there are 32,000 ways I can tweak things on this. And the HTC One is freaking gorgeous, people. If you haven't seen it, if you think about an Android phone or think about an iPhone 5, go take a look at the HTC One. It is gorgeous. And I got to say the Galaxy Note 2 with the gigantic screen. I've been playing around with one. I'm kind of in love with the gigantic screen because
it's
everything
hard to go back.
Yeah, everything. My iPhone looks so small now compared to that Galaxy.
That's the only thing I would say. Like, I hooked my mom up. Her first smartphone was the iPhone 5, and I think it's perfect for her. But for me, I'm more of a video junkie. I need something closer to a 16x9. I think I have 720p on my current S3. It's going to 1080p on the S4. But I'll be honest with you, though. I want to know more about the tin story to see, like, is every cell phone made today incorporating child labor? Is that the truth now? Is that?
Oh, no.
It's sad. I don't want to end on a dark note, but there you go.
On a light note. Sad.
Keep digging, kid. I need my tin.
Actually, it's horrible. But
that is horrible.
Wow, you are ending on a low note.
Let me stop. Happy thoughts. What can I think of here?
The chat room is now evolving into a battle, which is now a three-way battle. Windows Phone, Nokia 920, Modern Berg, no removable battery.
You know, I've never used a Windows
Phone. It's really funny to watch the chat room get going. We gotta go. OMG Chad's coming up next. They got a hard in, so we got a hard out. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for joining us today. Robert Heron, my partner in crime on Techzilla, TEKZILLA.com. We got some exciting stuff coming up for you next week. including actually, I have a power monitor on the meter for my house I'm testing right now, and I'll talk a little bit about that next week on the show. HD Nation, which you can now find our multiple segment HD Nation. We got some Blu-ray reviews coming up by Mr. Robert Heron. I'm going to be talking about the issues of putting surround sound in a small room on HD Nation next week, and you can find that on youtube.com/TECHFEED. That's youtube.com/techfeed. And if you're looking for more Twitch, and I hope you are, Mr. Ryan Trout's going to be back next week. You can go to twit.tv/Twitch. That is TWICH at twit.tv to email us questions. We love them. Keep them coming to you. I'm Patrick Dorton.
And I'm Robert Heron.
We'll see you next week on Twitch. Or at least I'll see you next week on Twitch. Thanks for listening, everybody.